This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 858, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like, I mean, I guess you. My Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 858. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey, I screwed up the script. Right away.
That's fine.
It's good. It's good to get it out of the way early.
It's fine. It's just the two of us. There's no one else with us here, despite what the script says.
No.
And we are a Fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, or fewer comics because it's the fifth week, and one of us takes a look at that stack of digital comics, in this case, and says, well, I got to pick up a good one. And they have to do that. And they called it the pick of the week. And we call it the pick of the week. It's not they. There's no they. There's no one controlling us. We're not puppets. We talk about, I don't even know where I am in the script anymore. I've got a headache. We talk about all those books, other books, maybe some listener mail. We have a good time. There'll be spoilers. This is a review show, so exercise some caution. Josh, you had the distinction on this fifth week event making the second to last pick of the week of the year.
Okay. A couple of things is that, one, this script has a look of a thing that was a missave. I'm like, I really feel like I did this, but who knows? So, I did the work. I was on it. I was diligent, but this is a mess. So I admit that.
That's fine.
Because ultimately, it is my responsibility. Two. So earlier, I want to say on Sunday, you said fifth week, there's nothing coming out this week, and to me, right, that used to be cool. I'm not going to worry about it until Thursday, and then Thursday, I'm like, fuck. So this time,
well, you still got to look. To see, for context.
You do. I don't make the best time management choices. We've talked about this. But I have learned over the past year or so, more specifically, is that when you say there's not a lot of comics, I still always end up with 15 or 16 comics.
Well, yeah, you and I have read different books and yada, yada, yada. I mean, I think I still had like 13. It wasn't like a tiny week. Like there's been fifth weeks where I've had like...
No, and not only that, but several of them were giant books.
Well, that's true too. It's the end of the year. I had 13 books plus giant books. That's not nothing. But.
Yeah, no, so it wasn't... So I was prepared, and I really like I went for it. Like I read everything I could find this week. I read all of the long 80-page issues because I was like, any of these could be patron pick, and I don't want to be scrambling to read something Thursday night that I hate.
Sure.
Not to prejudge anything. Anyway, So that's where we are. I don't think that information or time was of any value to anyone but me. Strange Academy finals number 2, or I guess it's number 20 in the sequence. Do they put legacy numbering on that?
They did.
Okay.
That's so dumb.
That's interesting.
Legacy number 20.
This is by Scotty Young and Humberto Ramos, as always. That consistency is a really big deal. Color by Edgar Delgado, and then Clayton Cowles on letters, who Tom King has said is the best he is at what he does, which is a comic book thing.
Right. He's Wolverine.
It really is a matter of just, this is another interesting issue in a long story, you know, a long single story about a bunch of characters who are relatively new. And I was just into seeing what happened next. And I thought that there were some good character development things and just some structure things that I really liked. This issue, there was a split. A bunch of the people went with the other girl who was the protagonist of the first one, but she became the big bad in the second volume of it. And at the end of the last issue, a bunch of people were like, screw this, we're going back to school. And so the issue opens with
that happening.
Yes. So two things happened in this first sequence that I really liked. One, you know, Dr. Voodoo, who can have any personality that somebody needs for a story. Yeah. Doesn't matter what he's really like. I don't know what he's like.
For sure.
He's whoever the story needs him to be. He's a cipher. You know, he's like, I know this is going to be hard, but they're coming back. And then, you know, Doyle, you know, gives the stink eye to the zombie girl and then instantly forgives her. So good to have you back. Okay. That conflict is avoided. We're not going to do that. Great choice. We already have two groups fighting. We don't need one of those groups in fighting. They fixed that early on because the other group was in fighting. Well, I just send those people back. They send them back. We're not going to fight with them. Fine. Second part of that scene is that didn't just set up those people coming back. Then they gave them chores. So we got a couple of pages of funny magic chores. Does that move the story forward? I don't know. Is it fun to read and watch and see how it gets drawn? Absolutely.
A whole issue on cleaning.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah,
And then it sort of skips again where they have to find Calvin, who, by the way, I don't know, deserves all this attention. He's kind of a fuck up, but it's not his fault. You got to take care of people, blah, blah, blah. And they go after him. And like, then we're straight into drug dealers. With the streets of Baltimore is what's going on with these magic drug dealers in New Orleans.
Right.
You know, and it turns into a different kind of story in the second half of it, which doesn't really connect to...
Well, Calvin has been dealing wishes like drugs. That they're not really drug dealers. They're wish dealers.
It is all framed like drugs.
Yeah, yeah. It's couched like drugs, but they're dealing actually wishes. But you know, it's been the story that's been going on for a while. I just think that I don't want to say under the radar. I don't know how popular this book is. I don't know how it sells, but feels like under the radar. Scotty Young and Humberto Ramos have created this really interesting world of characters. And I thought to myself already in this, you know, people are always pushing, rightly so, for more diverse and younger characters. And here's a whole bunch of really interesting ones.
Yeah.
And no one's reading them or no one seems to care about them. I mean, like, they're good characters. These are all good characters.
Have you noticed I have noticed that when we're talking about new characters coming out, the young teams tend to be the thing, you know, from back to Young Avengers, to Avengers Academy, to... and that the spinoff of that, which was the island. Remember the island where they all went?
Avengers Arena?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was just a sort of continuation of Avengers Academy. There was the Jason Aaron X-Men Wolverine school thing.
Right.
There's this. Like, these work. And you do end up with... Some of the characters are just, you know, versions, spinoffs of ones that already exist. But others aren't. You know, you got a zombie girl here. That's interesting. That's not I mean, it's very familiar in a way, but she's a different kind of character. You have, you know, Doyle is Dormammu's son, but it doesn't really feel like a spinoff of him. It's a different kind of thing. And you're right. And because it's relatively long form, I mean, they went 18 issues with that first volume. Now we're 2 into this one. You know, it's one long serialized. Like, this is what comics, this is what I think of as comics. This is what it should be. They're new characters.
I don't want to step on our upcoming Booksplode, but this does have the feel of the ongoing soap opera that other comics don't seem to have anymore.
Yeah.
And this feels almost like a late 80s, early 90s style comic written in the modern way.
Right. Really well. And, you know, at the same time, you have top talent on it.
Yes.
You know, it's so weird. if you came into comics in the last 2 years, you'd be like, wow, this Scotty Young guy writes great comics. You would have no idea that he was one of the most popular artists, you know, in comics.
Is, just in his commissions, as opposed to trying to.
Right, but he doesn't do, you know, he'll do covers, and he did the baby things. And I know enough people now, and I know the job enough that I don't blame anybody for that. Like, I used to be like, why doesn't he draw internals? I interiors, not internals. It works, but I don't blame anybody for that.
Drawing
is hard. I totally get it.
It's time consuming.
Drawing's fun and hard, but drawing comic book sequentials day in, day out for a long time is not compatible with a lot of lifestyles that once you are successful enough, you may not have to live.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? It takes up so much time. They don't get weekends. You know, they don't get time off.
It's just, you know, and then at the same time, though, like, it's in that same sense, you know, I've said this before, but like, Scotty Young, like, he's no longer like an artist who writes comics. He writes great comics.
Right.
You know, and it's just a really good series. And I remember they sent us, they actually mailed us the first issues of this. Do you remember that? And that never happens.
Marvel never does that.
And
in fact, we've been doing this for 17 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, we've been doing Fanboy for 22 years. Is that the only time Marvel's ever emailed a physical comic out?
Mailed.
There? Like mailed it.
Probably.
If it's happened less than 5 times.
Less than 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had different kind of events in the past, but it was a different world then. You know, I just, an issue comes out and we've never read this and been like, oh, that wasn't a great issue. Like, it's always interesting and fun and original, but while still having its fingers in the roots of Marvel, and on a week where nobody's doing anything really special, this kind of thing is the thing that shines. It's like, oh, good. But, you know, it's the food you like to eat. You know, it's and it always delivers in that way.
And it's a book you can give to younger readers, you know, that want to see, you know, more of themselves reflected in the book. Not even just from a racial standpoint, but just from like a lifestyle. Like, the kids feel very, and look, you got two middle-aged guys doing this book, but the kids feel very authentic. You know, Scotty has his finger on the pulse of the younger generation in a way. I mean, so some of this felt, there was one point here where I felt like a little old man writing kids, but for the most part, it's felt pretty solid. And I don't even know what I'm talking about, because I don't know any kids. It feels like a very authentic school experience. Mm-hmm. And we've all been to school.
School is fairly universal. The language changes a little bit. What I was going to say is that he writes his kids to seem at least younger than Brian Bendis's kids seem.
Right.
So
Brian Bendis's kids have always been 50-year-old men.
Yeah.
But
they're just old men in the deli.
But this was good. This was another good issue. I'm always, there's always something in this book that Humberto Ramos does that's like, oh, look at that. There's one panel here on page 13 where the all the knives come flying at the characters, and there's this circular panel construction that was fun.
Oh yeah,
there's always just something interesting and fun. His panels always have tons of fun things and details and backgrounds, and there's just a lot going on. It's amazing this guy gets these books out like they do.
You know, one thing I like about Ramos is that in the past, like, you would, like, you know, be like, oh, he's that really cartoony, impressionistic guy.
Yeah.
I don't even notice that anymore. I just notice, like, his storytelling and the energy on the page is always really strong.
And you can only get to be the cartoony impressionistic guy when your fundamentals are solid.
Yes. Yeah.
Because otherwise it's just a mess on the page. And he can do exaggerated, you know, anatomy. He can do exaggerated facial expressions. He can have their mouths super wide open if his fundamentals are there. If they're not, then it looks like a mess. This and this, exactly the opposite. I bet these kids are going to appreciate the mindless ones more.
Sure.
I mean,
that's always the thing.
Can you force kids to clean?
His sense of space is really strong. You know, you had the there's a scene that takes place in the bathroom, and there's some really funny stuff in here too. Like, the cleaning sequences are great.
Yeah.
You know, there's what you can see, and then there's what you can see with your third eye, and like in there it's really messed up. And then so he's got this M.C. Escher like space that he's then living in. You know, they go outside, they're having this barbecue, and you actually see, you have a sense of the space that they're in. It's not just floating there. Right. Like, you see the school in the background, you see the sort of, you know, there's lights strung up, you have scale for everything. And I've noticed that through the whole thing is that the characters always seem to be rooted in a place. When they go into the streets of New Orleans, when they go into the alleys, they go into the basement, it always exists in a place. And a lot of folks don't do that. It really is like this tiny thing that you can get away with not doing it. But he does it really well, and I noticed that.
Yeah, this is a great book. If you haven't checked it out, I mean, there's only been 20 issues. Mm-hmm. And it might be a good gift if you're looking to give a comic to a younger reader.
That's a good long time to be in a story that is still compelling. I love that. Like, it wasn't 6 issues, 8 issues, 12 issues. Like, we're just going to keep going with it. And
it's basically still the same story we've been telling. I mean, the whole thing with is it Cam? What is his name?
Doyle?
Calvin? No, Calvin. Yeah. That's been going on since the beginning, you know, feeling like an outcast in the group and then being revealed he doesn't actually have powers. And that's all been, you know, this has basically been the story the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's been really good. Big issue out this week was Superman Kal-El Returns Special #1. This was, I feel like we've had a lot of Kal-El Returns. I guess that's because that's been the little logo on all the Superman books, but
sure.
He's back. Let's finish this now. He's back. I'm acting like he was dead, which he wasn't dead. He was just on another planet. And then at the end of this, like, I'm just going to say the dumb thing, get out of the way. The last page of this, which is an oversized issue, is Superman being zapped away to the events of Justice League 75 and then Dark Crisis. That was like 6 months ago where he was quote unquote killed with the rest of the Justice League. And like, DC is a fucking nightmare. Anyway, I loved the Mark Waid story so much. The Concert That Ate Gotham, which is basically another Superman Batman team up with art by Clayton Henry. And, you know, that was almost a full length comics. Like, I think it was 20 pages.
It wasn't
20 pages.
Seemed long. They weren't 5-6 page stories.
It was 12 pages.
Yeah. You sat in it for a while.
That was pretty meaty and good. And it had a really great repartee between Bruce and Clark while they were Batman and when they were out of their costumes. And, you really got the sense of them as friends here. There was a lot of, you know, making fun of each other. And, you know, Batman saying he trained at the Cordon Bleu. And Clark's like, but you didn't train at the Cordon Bleu. You only trained for things that help you with justice. And so he's cooking for Clark. Like, it was just, you could tell they were friends. And that's something you don't get. Mark Waid really gets it. We've been saying it over and over since Batman, Superman, World's Finest. But, man, he gets it. He really gets the DC universe.
What's funny is that you watch them in this scene and Bruce has a big smile on his face.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if he'd do that. And then I thought, Mark Waid's saying he does. So he does. If another writer did that, I'd be like, I'm not sure. But here I was like, this is what Mark Waid says. He's the one guy he's comfortable with. And like, then you get a sense of like, this is who this guy is under all of that. And it's too bad that he can't be that person.
He is that person with his family.
Depends. He's not this smiley, jokey guy, though.
A little bit.
I can't see him doing this with Tim.
Yeah, yeah. When he was younger, he would. When he was content at home with Alfred and the boys and Barbara and Cass and stuff, he's much more lighter. And here, you know, he makes a little joke about how he used his skills, the Cordon Bleu, to crack a diamond smuggling case. And Clark is like, you know, trying to figure out if he's telling the truth or not. And it's a little joke. It was fun.
All of that stuff. Yes, you're absolutely right. So all that stuff aside about what they're doing publishing wise and everything, like I just said, okay, here's a handful of Superman stories.
Yes.
And I'm very happy about that because people tend to not do great with long-term Superman stories, but short Superman stories can be really delightful. And I think you saw that. I pretty much liked the Cena Grace Dean Haspiel story. It didn't quite end well. Something's weird about it. Like, he's like, I finally got my picture. And I was like, we should probably see the picture that you got just as a thing.
Well, that was the picture. It was the one of Superman floating, holding the other pictures.
I know, but it wasn't super clear. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, you could have not shown that, but shown it in a frame. That's me nitpicking. The Marv Wolfman story was weird, but then when I saw it was Marv Wolfman, I was like, all right, that's great. But, and I liked, what's her name? Naomi. I liked the bit where they went and had coffee and talked and like, he got to be.
Yeah, that was the last Justice story. League. That was the Alex Segura story, which was my other, my two favorites are the first one and the last one. The middle ones were okay. I enjoyed them well enough, but the one where he goes back to the Justice League and they're all happy to see him and Naomi is excited and he sort of gives her a, you know, she's like, this is so cool. Being in the Justice League and hanging out with you guys is so cool. You guys just talk like regular people and your friends. And he's like, walks through the history of the Justice League. without it being sledgehammering. I thought, you know what?
Right.
If there is a writer who would do this other than Mark Waid, it's Alex Segura, who worked at DC forever and, you know, knows that history backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, and it's little nods. It's mostly in the art with where we see the, Morrison era. We see the Satellite era. We see the, you know, the original 60s era. And we see references to Waid's, Mark Waid's stories and the Death of Superman. Like, it sort of walks through the entire situation, showing her how they've, you know, they've loved and they've lost and they've had fun and they've had tragedy. And, you know, it's all a very, you know, it's a hard thing, even if it seems like it's fun. This is one of those things where it's like, so there's a bar in the watchtower and there's a,
I thought it was just a coffee bar.
Well, this is the core bar. Right. And there's a bunch of alcohol bottles back there. I mean, they could have coffee and there's just a bunch of guys in like frumpy security guard outfits in the background. Like,
what are those guys going to do?
What is going on?
The Hall of Justice is a tourist attraction too, right?
Are they in the Hall of Justice or in the Watchtower?
They're not in the Watchtower.
Is that a thing anymore?
I don't think so.
I've got
the Hall of Justice. That's the whole thing. He walks to the Hall of Justice. He feels good about
it. Okay, that makes more sense. But so there, I guess that there would be a bar in the Hall of Justice because they got to, you know.
You know what? I don't know that they would. I would think like Batman would be like, that's, you don't want to mix alcohol with this stuff. But then someone's like, we need it for the revenue. And he's like, no, we don't. I'm super rich.
Not anymore. Remember? He's got his best friend stole all his money.
That's the stupidest thing. So, do you notice that Fico Osseo, if you look through this story, is doing a weird thing with Superman's bulge in every page?
I did not notice it.
Well, I did. And I just, it's in every one of them. Like, okay, you're hanging a brick in there? Is that what's going on?
Well, he and Lois were banging in Venice, so.
Sure. That's true.
It was fun. It was fun.
I didn't mind reading it.
Yeah, it was. Didn't feel long either. It was good. You're right. Those a lot of oversized books this week. Mm-hmm. Justice Society of America number one. I should say the whole title. Geoff Johns and Mikael Janin with some Jerry Ordway flashback art, and I like this a lot. This must be incomprehensible if you don't have at least a working knowledge of Earth 2. Bronze Age DC Comics, because this is Geoff Johns is taking everything again, throwing it in the plate, and a lot of this is from the Bronze Age Earth 2 Justice League story, like where Helena Wayne, the daughter of Bruce and Catwoman, Bruce being murdered by just a random dude. This is all straight from those comics in the Bronze Age. Like, this is all that. And if you don't know that, you may just be like, what is going on here? And I'm assuming that's what you were thinking.
I wasn't super lost, but I kind of expected to. Again, Captain Kara didn't show up, so we're good. If he had, different story. But I knew it wasn't gonna be the thing, and I was a little put off by it. But then at the end, you know, it ends up in 1940, and I was like, all right, I can deal with this. I get who Helena Wayne is. Like, right. She's been in enough things. I wasn't super lost. I see what you're saying, but I was good. I mean, it really is a matter of I trust the storyteller. He's right. Just real good.
I mean, so, you know, it seems like it's taking place I don't know. It's dangerous to even put a stake in the ground or anything with DC, but it's in my head, it's taking place in those comics that take place in the DC's future. And then in the end of the story, Helena Wayne Huntress gets zapped back to 1940, I guess, to where the original Justice Society. Because in the future, she's with all the Justice Society's kids, or at least their villain kids. They're all sort of a bunch. The team is a bunch of villain kids, and so that's what.
Yeah, that first part, I was like, I'm glad that's over.
Although it did make me think about The Mist, and that my family mini we did about bad DC villains, and The Mist was one of them. Mm-hmm. I thought Mikael Janin. I'm just going to say Michael. I thought he had a whole Kevin Maguire thing going, which I've never seen from him before. At times I was like, I know this is Mikael Janin, but it doesn't look like Mikael Janin. What is going on? Like, in a good way. And I mean, he's very good. I don't think, but whatever he was doing different, I thought was a real interesting choice, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he tends to lead toward everyone being real bulky and sexy, kind of in a turned up way. And I feel like the cartooning was, I don't know, more fluid. I think you're right.
It was good.
Make a good point. Yeah,
it looked really good. I'm just looking at like the close ups of the faces. I'm thinking of like. Page 14, Helena Wayne's face at the bottom, sort of There's one I really thought about it. Where is it? Anyway, well, it was page 17. Like, look at that whole page. It looks, that top panel looks just like Kevin Maguire, and so does the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I'm excited, obviously. I don't know why every Justice Society member gets to keep their classic suit except for Jay Garrick, but whatever. I'm excited for this book, and I'm excited for her to be back in time. She's knocked out in Johnny Thunder and the Genie Finder. So whatever nonsense Geoff Johns wants to do, I'm down for it.
Yeah. So I'm looking through this is some nerd shit I'm about to say. I'm looking through this, and every page is kind of interesting. There's certain pages where stuff breaks the panel. So if I'm looking at page 13, the heads break the panel and go up into the one above that. And then the one you were talking about, like her crossbow doesn't break the panel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's somebody holds a gun up, and like that does. And I'm curious, like what the thinking, page 15, like the gun at the bottom of the page does break the panel above it. I'm just curious, like what makes sometimes that's the choice and other times it's not.
Right.
I don't know. It's I just like it. It's one of those things, like, I don't think there's good or bad or wrong. I just like thinking about, like, well, what's the reason here? Because there should be a reason for everything that gets done, you know, mm-hmm. in a perfect world. But I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was ambitious, and I like that part about it. And I like that Geoff Johns, he seems to be able to do whatever he wants to, and I trust him to do that. So it's cool.
And if he wants to do this weird sort of out of time, all continuities book, then the Justice Society is a good place to do it.
Yeah, and he loves, you know, he's done great Justice Society stories for years and years and years, so there's no reason to think that he's going to blow it on this.
DC's Grifter got run over by a reindeer, which is DC's latest holiday special. And I got to give him credit for the title. Even though I am annoyed by Wildstorm being the DC universe and don't really care about Grifter, it's a good title.
It doesn't make sense, but I don't need it to.
Well, it's playing Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
I know, I get it, but why Grifter?
Because it just says the G. It
starts with GR.
And the syllables work.
Okay.
That's really it.
I enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to.
Interesting.
Not all of it. It's like any anthology one, but I loved the Frankenstein snowman story. I loved it.
it was interesting.
There's about four panels on the second page, and like all of the, sorry, this is by Dave Wildgoss with PJ Holden on art, and like everything that Frankenstein did, and it was funny. I remember Lemire did a Frankenstein book, and it was super serious, and I was like, yeah. I can't get it. But in this, just like, I'm no stranger to agony, snowman. I bring you hellfire. And he shoots the snowman, and he holds his head up, and the head of the snowman says, I won't hurt anyone else. And they go on a quest together. And he holds his head in front of him like Hamlet for a couple of pages. You know, they end up with this weird group. You've got Grodd and Superman, and they go on this weird quest. Yeah. Then it was very silly.
It was interesting to see obviously that's why they read it, but the parallels between sort of the traditional holiday snowman character and Frankenstein as being sort of these creatures of random parts, and, you know, the commiseration between the two of them for being creations from other people was interesting. I was like, oh, okay.
Then you got this middle section, which not so much.
Eight stories, and I would say you had more misses than hits. I there were some I enjoyed, but for some of them I was just like, okay, is this over?
But I mean, I think the thing is that, like, you're right, but the first couple set a really good tone for me, and I really enjoyed them. I was unable to finish the Max Bemis Not So Silent Night story. I can't, but it was like about a band.
Oh yeah,
it was horrendous.
I didn't finish that one either, honestly.
It was like. I was like, what are all these words? This doesn't make sense. This is
terrible. And we like Max Bemis's, but I just didn't
the Harley Quinn stuff wasn't great. You know.
I liked the Batman one, and I liked the – I actually liked the Grifter one mostly because it had interesting art. But
I liked the Animal Man story too. I mean, it was grim, but I was like, ugh. He went through some shit, but he had to go back to his family and be there. And I kind of was just like, oh, I miss Animal Man. I haven't seen him in a while. And the Grifter story wasn't bad. Great art in it.
Yeah. You know, these holiday specials are usually hit and miss these days. You know, in the old days, they might have put better talent on them, and they might have, you know, But this is more like, this feels more like a tryout book. Not all these people on this book are unknown names, like Derek Friedholz and Dustin Gwynn on the Grifter story, at least part of it. But, and John Layman, and you had Max Bemis, and people who've, David Lapham, people have done, you know, a lot of work. But a lot of people, names you don't know. So it can be hit and miss. But ultimately, it was enjoyable enough.
I mean, if a couple of them hit, then you're like, great. You know, like, I'm just, I don't know, it doesn't bother me. Right. I'm different than I used to be.
You've changed.
Well, it wasn't a super busy week either.
No, it certainly wasn't bad. I've read worse.
Much.
So one thing DC does, tends to do in these fifth week things, is they dump annuals on us. Annuals used to have a purpose. They don't seem to have a purpose anymore. I read three this week. I want to talk about two of them. And both of them, I want to point out, if you didn't read them and you were reading the regular books, you should pick up, because these are just another issue of the regular series, which is just, I think, annoying.
Yes.
Batgirl's 2022 annual number one, written by the regular Batgirl team of Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, with art by Robbie Rodriguez. And this was really fun. This is my favorite one of all the annuals this week, in which I love a body swap story. Give me a body swap story and I will take it. And this one, a mystical coin swaps Stephanie and Cassandra's bodies, so they are now stuck going on adventures. You know, Stephanie, who won't shut up, now has to pretend to be Cass, and Cass, who doesn't talk, has to pretend to be Stephanie. And they both get kidnapped by their respective parents at the end, Glue Master and what is Cassie's mom? I always mix her up with Talia. It's the other one.
I don't know.
Is it? It's the other really dangerous Lady Shiva. Lady Shiva.
Which is different than Lady Deathstrike, which is, because there's the Wolverine one.
Yeah, no.
It's like the same Marvel character. Okay, I know that.
This was just a really fun adventure in between arcs, but it's also continuing on in Batgirl. So it's a two-part story. Part two is in the regular book. So if you didn't pick this up and you're reading Batgirls, you might want to go back and get it. But it's really enjoyable. These are fun characters. I like this friendship a lot between Cass and Stephanie. I still think Cass talks about 50% too much. She shouldn't say more than three or four words at a clip. But She's a good character. She's one of our favorite characters in the DC universe, You and I. And I'm liking this book quite a bit. And I love the body swap story. Like I said, it's fun. Nightwing 2022 annual number one, Tom Taylor wrote with Eduardo Panseca on art. And again, this continues on into the Nightwing book. And here we have the origin of the heart guy. What is his name? I don't know anything today.
Heart taker. Heartbreaker. Don't you mess around with me.
You read this, I assume.
Yeah, I did. And okay. I kind of agree with you that it's just another issue, but also it is, I always think of, like, there's origin stories took place in Preacher out of the main series. So there's an argument for this to be made. Either way, I really enjoyed this story. And I think this would have been weird in the main book, quite honestly, because it's a little like, here's the psychopath.
So he did a good job, Tom Taylor, so the Heart Taker is basically like a mirror image Batman. He was a super rich guy who had a psychopath for a butler who ended up raising him after the Heart Taker kid killed his parents. The butler killed him by accident. And his worst impulses were basically encouraged by the psychopath butler, who was not even the real butler.
He killed the parents on purpose. He injured the Heart Taker kid.
Oh, that's right. Accident. He didn't want the parents raising the kid anymore, so he blew up their helicopter. Right. And then they tied it into the main book by showing that this Heart Taker guy was one of the kids who beat up another kid at school that caused Dick and Barbara to meet. And there was a sequence in the early on in the series where we had a flashback where Dick, you know, stopped a bunch of bullies, and then Barbara got involved, and that's how they met.
But also, and his, like, psychopath awakening was watching Dick's parents die at the circus.
Right.
That was their other connection.
This is a very comic book. You're like, here, we're going to insert this guy into, and it worked, but it worked.
Yes.
And the, you know, creepy psycho butler who is like this guy's mentor and father figure, and the way that they sort of constructed him out of parts, again, kind of like Frankenstein, where he gets a new heart because in the accident, his heart's damaged, and then ends up giving him a new, like, cybernetic arm, and then at the end he gets Blockbuster's heart, so he has this giant pumping heart that he can use to fight.
It's pretty great.
This was fun. This was good.
It was super fun. Yeah. Also, and I don't want to, we got to move on because it's short, but Dick Grayson is a terrible pet owner. It just just his lifestyle does not afford the pet the best possible. Yeah,
that's
the
little backup
success
story where he the day in the life of a night bite wing. But to me, I got caught up on so Dick's at home. He's spending it. We're going to move on. Dick's at home, spending it with Bitewing, and he's reading in his messy apartment. And Barbara calls us, "Hey, I'm downstairs. I'm being spontaneous and fun." And he's like, "Sorry, I'm hanging out with the dog." And she's like, "Here's a picture of me. Here's what I'm wearing underneath the coat I'm wearing." And he was like, "Oh shit, I'm on my way down."
I know
and
what
then
you're saying.
We cut down, and she's just wearing a regular like calf length dress under her coat.
A long baggy calf length dress.
I know. I was like, what?
Maybe he just likes that color on her with her hair.
It's just like there was a miscommunication between the script and the artist. Like, she's either supposed to be wearing a sexy dress, or it should have said, "Here's what I'm wearing under the dress." But when we cut to the picture, I was like, she's wearing a calf-length turquoise.
You're upset because you were promised sexiness and you didn't get any.
I didn't get sexiness.
You didn't. I thought the same thing when I read it. I'm not mad about it, but you're absolutely right. Strange number 8. Is it its own number because it's its own story? It's kind of Doctor Strange, but I'm not
reading it. So
Strange number 8 is a weird book for me because I always think I'm not going to like it. And I was like, I don't know why I'm reading this. And then I start reading and I was like, I am kind of interested. I like that, Doctor Strange, he's dead, but he's not really dead. And he's on a different adventure. And I thought there was a really interesting little bit where they can't touch each other because she is the Sorcerer Supreme and he's the aspect of death and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, Clea, Strange, Sorcerer Supreme. I it's not like a great book, but it's one that I think Jed MacKay has a thing where he does, really good sort of single issues and series with, characters who are not necessarily, top tier. They're B or C list people. I think, we saw him do that with the Catwoman book. Not Catwoman, Black Cat. It's you can see like the similarities of these characters come out like several times where they have their equivalent over at the other publisher because we're constantly getting them in Lady Shiva, Deathstrike, which is Catwoman, now Black Panther. It's Mockingbird. It's Black Canary. It's especially the women it seems to get. Anyway, I enjoy it. Also, this had Stefano Landini on art, which is a name I hadn't heard in a while. But I remember he showed up a lot, I think, on Vertigo books for a while, but I thought it looked great. There was a couple times just reading the book where I was like, oh, this is really lovely art from the guy who's not normally on it, I don't think.
Stillwater 16, we're heading towards the final, which is 18 is the final issue. Regular team Chip Zdarsky, Roman Perez, and this is the flashback to tell us how this town came to be, and I found it unsatisfying. And I think that sometimes it's just best to be like, hey, this is just a magical town and we don't know why no one dies here. And that's good enough. We don't need to explain every detail.
I agree with that, but I did like that the woman is still there.
Yes.
That part made it interesting to me because that to me is a really fascinating concept. It's like, what is a woman who has been alive since before the Civil War going to think of the world as it exists now? And instead of being like, I don't trust your world and magic, like she was there while it all came along, just like we did with the internet or with whatever. And I find that fascinating because that's one of the reasons that I read history is because I like to try to connect how people used to be to how they are now. They're not going to have a lot of time to work with it, but I do like the concept. That's my addition.
What was the source of the curse? Was it the priest?
I don't know. I don't care.
Oh, no. It was her blood. That's right. It was some demon showed up as her dead son because this takes place in the Civil War. And she bites his finger and then dips it in the ink and then she draws the boundaries of the town in that demon blood. And that's how the curse happens.
We didn't need any of that.
Didn't need it.
And I'm fine. Didn't need it. I mean, I agree with you in that way, but as a way to get like a character like that. But they should have done it earlier, so we could have played with it more, I think.
Yeah. So those are the books we're going to talk about. Not tons of books, but they were solid enough. But over at patreon.com/ifanboy, all the patrons who are supporting the show get to vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron, one patron, one vote. And this week, by the margin of one vote, a squeaky squeaker. The winner was Avengers Assemble Alpha Number 1 by Jason Aaron, Brian Hitch, Andrew Curry, Alex Sinclair, and Corey Pettit. This beat Justice Society of America by one vote. And this is another oversized book. It's 42 digital pages, but it's probably like 60 pages. There's a lot of double page spreads.
Yeah.
And I have Brian Hitch. I've read every issue of Jason Aaron's regular Avengers run. And I'm putting red in quotes because a couple of them I skimmed because I just, there's some of the stuff I just haven't cared about, like the Star Brand or the, anytime the Star Brand or the prehistoric Avengers show up, I skim. Just don't care. But I've read them, at least. I've held them in my hands on this iPad and read them. But I haven't read any Avengers Forever except for that one issue, the first one.
Yeah, same.
And I haven't, so I have no idea what's going on in this story. And this is basically the, from what I can tell, the connective tissue between Avengers and Avengers Forever and all leading together into the this final arc of Jason Aaron's Avengers run, which has been going on for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Drawn by Brian Hitch. Featuring some character called Avenger Prime from the future, who we don't know is wearing, he's wearing a suit and a Thor helmet, and fighting Mephisto, involving a very long misunderstanding fight between the current Avengers and the prehistoric Avengers, and that's it. That's all I can say.
I mean, that's a classic, you know, team up stuff. They got to fight for a while first. We all just accept it as a thing, and that part was fine. I mean, my review is probably the same thing that I told you. Early in the week when I didn't know it was going to be patron pick, and I was almost sure you weren't going to read it. So I was like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was better than I expected because the Avengers Forever stuff I found completely unsatisfying. This one, you know, like I knew the characters where I liked all the stuff coming together. I had fun reading it. I was interested to see Brian Hitch, but I do think that Brian Hitch is an artist I used to get much more excited about than I do now. I don't think that he's bad or has gotten worse. It just was so revolutionary at the time, and now it just, you know.
Well, he was an innovative artist 20 years ago, and his style hasn't changed.
At all.
And so,
it doesn't really mesh with modern comics as much for whatever reason.
It's not bad. In fact, I thought this was...
You're right.
Good Hitch. And, you know, we've seen a lot of him, you know, over the years lately, and I thought this was solid. I thought there was some panels here. There was a, you know, if you want a guy who was going to draw a giant battle sequence that takes up most of the book, he's probably a good guy to get.
He is,
and it was fine. I just don't have any context. I don't really care about the prehistoric Avengers. I don't like the concept. You know, I don't really like legacy in the sense like every hero is part of a lineage of heroes. Like I just don't like that stuff in general, and with very rare exceptions.
I've had trouble connecting any of the prehistoric Avengers for whatever reason. So when I say I don't care about them, it's like they've been around. I've had lots of chances to, but I don't find it super interesting for whatever reason. I think if you took those out of this whole thing, I would probably like it more. I mean, when I say the whole thing, I mean like the entire run.
Mm-hmm.
There's been bits of it that I've liked a lot. I liked the vampire stuff. I liked, you know, the thing with not Detective
the ape
Champ.
Guy.
I did it again. They're ape guy. You know, and the Russian vampires, all that stuff.
I think the other thing is that he really likes Ghost Rider.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't really care. Like, he seems, Ghost Rider seems to, and I get it. He wrote the Ghost Rider book for a while.
It was one of his first series, too.
And he's placed him centrally in these stories. And I'm fine with Ghost Rider as a spice in a stew, but I don't want a Ghost Rider stew.
Mm-hmm.
And just because it's just personal taste, I just don't care about Ghost Rider. So you add all these elements up, and it's just not a book that connects with me at all, really. So
I didn't think it was fun. Like I enjoyed reading it. I didn't think
it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It just was like I'm not connecting with this outside of sort of clinically reading it and trying to find some, you know, enjoyment in the way it's put together. And
I thought this is probably going to be a mess. Because it's bringing all of those characters together, and I didn't find it that way,
right?
So
Avengers Assemble Alpha number one. So it continues into Avengers 63 and Avengers Forever 12. I feel like they should have done this after Avengers Forever ended, and then gone into streamline it.
Avengers Forever is the whole thing with Nighthawk.
I don't know, man. Nighthawk was in this book.
I know, but like, so Nighthawk is a little like the Marvel Cap and Carrot for me. That guy shows up and I'm like,
I'm out.
Mentally, yeah.
Ratings, Avengers Assemble Alpha number one out of five. 2.75.
3.25.
Are you going to stick with? I guess this is just a one shot. So,
I mean, I'm not going to stop reading the Avengers book.
But you're not reading Avengers Forever.
No.
All right.
Does it all go back and forth? Is it like a crossover thing?
No idea.
All right. Well, we'll see. Yeah.
So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can add a book to the rundown. And let's talk about the patron pick. I'm sorry. Let's talk about the patron power, and then we'll do the other thing.
Okay.
If you give it a $5 or higher level, you get a superpower live on the show. It's our thank you for being a patron. And we like to do this fun little game in which you get a superpower. And we don't guarantee you'll like it. And we don't guarantee that it'll be fun. But it'll be there. You'll have it forever.
Sure.
Ian Craig can feel kind of like, almost like a Jedi thing, but not exactly. But he can feel what other people are feeling about him in the moment.
But it's accurate, as opposed to I think all these people hate me, or
it's accurate. And it's not just,
that's really helpful.
It's not just someone like face to face. It's like, if there's someone in the world that's like, Ian Craig, that son of a bitch, he's like, ooh, there's someone who does not like me right now. Or
that's
Ian Craig, I'd like to find out more about this guy in a sexy way. He's like, oh, someone's having some sexy thoughts about me right now. He can feel like a disturbance in the force, but for emotions about him.
I mean, it would be incredibly useful.
Sure.
But also, you know, if for some reason you are not likable.
Or any kind of public facing figure.
Sure.
Where lots of people, you know, I'm not talking about us at all. I'm just saying, like, in general, like, if you're like a famous actor or something, you're just like, people think about you all the time. It's just unrelenting thoughts about you. So you just like keep a low profile. But,
I would want to know that a lot of people liked me.
Sure.
But I wouldn't want to know that a lot of people didn't like me.
And that's a double-edged sword.
His name, Ian Craig, is a mix-up of Ian Fleming and Daniel Craig. And so I'm just picturing him in a tuxedo.
He's super Bondy. He's just always in a tuxedo. He's always drinking martinis. He's got a drinking problem. Let's face it.
He's functional, though.
he gets his work done and his family, but he does have to have a martini in the morning.
Wow, morning.
And a watered-down, shaken one.
Sure, obviously.
So thanks, Ian, for being a patron. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where he went to support the show. We thank everyone who has supported us throughout the years and through this year. We're getting down to the end of the year, and we thank everyone who's done that throughout. We have all kinds of fun things that happen because of the patrons. We have all these extra shows we do because of the patrons. And so we try to reward them with fun things like the patron power, and the patron pick, and the patron hangout. And we have the Discord community and the Facebook community. And as we've been talking about, the new stretch goals are coming. We actually have a meeting on the books about it. It's a meeting. It's happening. And we will be unveiling those new stretch goals, I believe, in January. So they're coming. And they're just some fun new ideas to sort of spice things up. You know, we've been in this relationship for a while. It's time to spice it up a bit. Get spicy. Some new things going on. New toys.
Make it spicy.
You know, some costumes. Things like that. So you'll be hearing about those soon. Fanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy our t-shirts. We've got 12 different designs. Fanboy.com/support is where you can tip via PayPal. Fanboy.com/Amazon is where you can buy books, like their Books Blood books, or the comics you read, we talk about in the show, or the music you hear. And bookshop.org is our partner to help independent bookstores. We put the links onto the website where applicable. And those links help independent bookstores all across the United States. And maybe it's international. It may not be. But those are all the ways people help to support the show. And it's important. I know this part seems very businessy and not beggy, but, you know, solicitous, but that's how the bills get paid. I was just doing the books, and it's not nothing. So it helps us keep the show going, if only from a bill paying standpoint. So it doesn't cost us money to do the show. And we get a little bit of money for our time and effort from being away from our families, and no one's getting rich off this. No one's even working full time on this anymore. So we do thank you, everyone who has helped support the show and kept going. Just from a logistical standpoint, we couldn't do it without you. So thank you very much. We appreciate that. I don't know how we are doing on time, because we babbled after you hit record. So I think we have some time.
Well, we absolutely have time. We absolutely have time to handle Carl's question, which is, this leads to more questions right away.
Okay.
Whose origin and backstory is more convoluted? DC's Power Girl or Marvel's Captain Marvel? Now, right away, I have questions.
Okay, so right off the top of your head, as a longtime reader of comics, what is Power Girl's origin?
I don't know. Okay, let's just say we're talking about Carol Danvers.
Right, because let's get to Marvel's origin.
I don't know either of those origins. Now, the fact is, the answer to this question is always Hawkman. But we have to put that out of the way. Like, there's no point in talking about origins and the answer not, wait, convoluted origins, the answer not being Hawkman or Hawkgirl or the combination of them. But let's just, we'll brush that aside. Do you know their, you must know Power Girl's origin.
Off the top of my head, not really. I mean, part of why she's convoluted is because she's had several different ones, depending on what era of comics you're at. And at a certain point, other than like a handful of characters, a lot of characters have convoluted origin stories. Mm-hmm. You know, it just happens. They change. And people who are not like in the top tier, they're constantly being changed. But no, I don't know. You know, at one point, Power Girl, I think her original origin was she was Kryptonian. That was like the pre-crisis, silver, bronze age.
Is she no longer Kryptonian?
She was Atlantean for a while.
That's bad.
Yeah. I don't even know what she is now anymore.
In my mind. Huh. That sounds pretty convoluted, I'm going to be honest.
In the New 52, she was from Earth 2.
Oh, right. I remember that. I remember that.
And then that got changed.
Kryptonian from Earth 2?
I don't even know. Gun to my head, I don't know what her origin is currently. Like the Power Girl you see in comics, I don't know. And it doesn't really necessarily matter.
Now, when we're going over to Captain Marvel, as I said, we actually know Mar-Vell's origin. We read it. We did a book split on it. Now, Carol Danvers, now to me, what's interesting about this, and also there's been several Captain Marvels in addition to that.
Sure.
Janice Vell, Photon Spectrum,
yep.
Whatever.
Spectrum, Photon, yeah.
She's actually the first Captain Marvel I ever knew.
Sure,
And Carol Danvers' first thing that I knew is she was Warbird in Busiek and Perez's Avengers. That's where I first met her.
Sure.
So as far as I'm concerned, her origin is that she's always been some version of Captain Marvel. I know she was a pilot prior to that. And I know I don't count the movie. Right. I love the movie. The movie's great, whatever. But in comics, I have no idea.
Right.
Like, she's got a sister who's Kree, I guess. So that obviously
Remember we saw her. We did the Booksplode about Captain Marvel, the original one.
Oh yeah, she worked at the base.
Right, and in those stories they had, the old stories, the original, she was just an officer on the base that he worked at.
Or she wasn't a pilot in that.
Encounter. No, she was like she was the security chief, remember? She was in charge of the base, keeping the base safe.
That's crazy they gave her that job in the 60s.
And so I remember there was an explosion. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And he saved her. And that's about all I know of her origin.
I mean, if we're comparing the two of them, it seems like it's Power Girls.
Well, because I think she's only had the one Captain Marvel. So, yeah. If you have one origin and you're up against someone with like three, then you win with the one.
It's nice to not think about the origins sometimes. Sometimes it matters, and other times just like, okay, here's Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Batman's is important, Superman's is important, Spider-Man's is important, Captain America's is important. Wolverine's is important. But for the most part, they're not necessarily important. Like, they're interesting. Yeah. I love origin stories, but they're not necessarily germane to the day-to-day activities of the character. And I would say Power Girl and Captain Marvel fall in that category.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess there must be a reason why he considers Captain Marvel's origin to be convoluted. I just don't know what it is.
Can I say something? I don't like Power Girl that much, but that's it's because I can't place her. If she's a Kryptonian, then she's, by default, one of the most powerful characters. You know, like, there's no reason that Supergirl and Power Girl are not equal to Clark Kent.
Right.
And by putting her in there, you are automatically making her a top-end character. But she's not. She's like a C-level character.
Right.
And that doesn't make sense. This is the thing where you can't compare like Flash to Superman for speed, because there's no answer. And anytime you are trying to give one, you are taking away something from the other one.
And, the answer is the Flash is faster. Jeff Johns established that. Those are for Charity Clark.
And that's fine. But in a way, making him faster makes him more powerful than Superman, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, they're all, at a certain point, it becomes a problem
if you
drill down too deeply.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Everything undercuts everything else. But Power Girl, for real, I just don't know where she fits in.
Yeah. I mean, I like Power Girl. That Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor series was terrific. Judd Winnick took it over. It was still terrific. It was a great series. And so I like her script. Plus, she was in the old Justice League International book. So I like her from back then. So she's a character I've always enjoyed.
I think I just mentally don't know what to do with her.
I get it. However, she's sort of a lost character, you know?
Yes, right now.
And it's a problem. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. I was going to say it's a problem when you're constantly mixing up who the character is, but...
It's awaiting a solution, though. She needs something...
I can't say I thought about her origin when I read that Power Girl book. That was terrific. I can't say I thought about it for one moment. I didn't, it didn't really matter. If someone says, that's a fun book. Well, who is she? Where'd she come from? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Captain Marvel, on the other hand, Carol Danvers, she has a very solid place in the Marvel universe. I like it. She's a leader. She's powerful. She's not all powerful, but she's a human. She has friends. She has a life.
Well, is she part Kree? Is that part of the confusion?
I think that either she's part Kree or I feel like she was experimented on or modified by the Kree in some way. And that is why she has a sister now, because it's probably Kree genetics were wound into her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's in whoever it came from. But it is
maybe
unrelated.
That's the convoluted part. I mean, I don't know how she initially got her powers.
I don't either.
She had that explosion in that book we read, and Captain Marvel saved her. And then I think, from what I'm reading now, the next time she shows up, she just has powers. I don't know how they said that. Oh, mm-hmm. It's revealed the energy exposure from the explosion of the device called the Psyche Magnetron. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Caused Denver's genetic structure to meld with Captain Marvel's. So she basically became a human Kree hybrid from that explosion because of that bomb. That's how she got powers. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
The other email we have here is good. I would like to keep it for later. I don't want to do it now.
Well, we have to do it next week. We got bankruptcy coming.
Well, we make the rules, Connor.
Let me ask you one final question before I move on.
Sure.
Who appeared first?
Ooh.
Captain Marvel?
I feel like it's a trick question because I want to say Captain Marvel. We're talking about Carol Danvers. I have no idea where Power Girl showed up. She feels like an 80s thing to me, but you're going to tell me she's from the 40s.
The answer is not actually easy because, Power Girl's first appearance was 1976.
That sounds right.
Carol Danvers' first appearance was 1968 as Carol Danvers, but as a superhero was 1977. So they basically appeared at the same time.
That's the same time that I first appeared as a superhero.
Yeah. She's been Miss Marvel, Binary, Warbird, and Captain Marvel. Her first appearance as a superhero, she was Miss Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like the same name as the character now.
Right. But she's been promoted.
Yeah, she was MS Marvel. She was looking for a husband. I assume in the 1970s, that's what their stories were about.
I like her.
So, good question, Carl. I don't know. I don't have an answer. Whose origin and backstory is more convoluted to Power Girl?
The real question is the convolution, is that the right word? Is that a negative or a positive?
Depends on the story, but overall,
exactly.
I think it's actually irrelevant.
Yeah. In fact, but in some ways, it's kind of fun. But again, not with Hawkman.
Hawkman. Exactly. I love Hawkman, but man, they can't make a decision. Even then, this Hawkman appearance this week in that book, it all had to play up his convoluted origin story. Get away from it. Yep. Run screaming from it.
You can't do it. It is the unsolvable theorem. It is the what's the Star Trek one?
The Kobayashi Maru?
Yes, the Kobayashi Maru of origin stories comic books.
You can only win by cheating. Contact@fanboy.com. Next week's our last show. After that, we go email bankruptcy. We start fresh. So you got to send us in a really good question this week. You got a week to get it to us if you want to get on this show. Otherwise, hold it till January. And also for the Media Explode as well. Same thing. So out now is the Black Panther Wakanda Forever review, the Media Explode Year in Mailbag. And this past week, we had the Batman Superman Battle of the Super Sons special edition animation Brain Trust show. We got it done. We were able to do it. It's out right now behind the show, and check that out. And then coming up this week, we'll have our final book explode of the year. Josh and I will be talking about Namor Visionaries, John Byrne, Volume 1. which will be coming out on the 8th of December. And then that following weekend, we'll have Pick of the Week 859, which will be the final Pick of the Week of the year. And the week after that, on December 18th, we will have our all-media year-end roundup, which is our traditional year-end show, in which we recount the things that we've been enjoying outside of comics throughout the year. And then we'll be back with Pick of the Week 860 in January of 2023, on the 8th of January. I went in a weird way, and I just kept going, and I circled back around.
Yeah, I caught that. Because for a second, you're like, January 08.
I was going to say January of 8, and I was like, that's weird.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Get over to ifhibbar.com. You can find all of the shows and the history of comic book writing that have all been there, from the writers and folks that we have employed and worked with over the years. You can go to facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter and at ifanboy comics on Instagram, where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can follow Connor and I on Instagram at CS Kilpatrick and at JA Flanagan. And there is our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. All of the old video shows that we did are there. And this show is posted every single week. Yeah. Subscribe, don't like, don't comment, don't, I don't care. just to keep it different from how other people treat YouTube. We're never going to get any, you know, we're not going to make money from it. So you know, it's there for your convenience.
Yeah, it's just a nice thing we do.
Yeah.
For you. Not for us. It takes time.
It did.
Sometimes it doesn't go up on Sunday. Sometimes things happen, it doesn't go up till Monday.
Well,
sometimes things happen and doesn't go up till like Wednesday, just because things happen.
But no one was like, where the hell's the YouTube show? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, sometimes, but that's all right. Okay. There was a week where it was late, like a week, but that's because something happened. Where are we? If you like the show, consider leaving a review or star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We should mention it's that time of the year where everyone who listens to Spotify feels like you need to know what they listen to.
And I don't have Spotify. I feel like I'm out of that whole thing.
I don't either. I don't have a Spotify. Someone sent me a link to a Spotify thing yesterday. I clicked on it, and it's like, sign up for Spotify. And I was like, I don't want to sign up for Spotify. I have my vinyl records and my Apple Music. I don't need anything other than that. So where are we talking about? Oh, anyway, wherever you listen to podcasts, what I'm saying is Apple Podcasts, previously called, what was it called before? Just podcasts, I guess. iTunes.
It was in iTunes.
Used to be like 75% of the listenership. Now it's down to 30% because there's a lot more places you can listen to podcasts now, but it's still the number one venue. But, you know, we're much more diversified in how people listen to our show.
Spotify. Audible does podcasts and Spotify. Yeah. And
I think Spotify is about 10% of how people listen to the show, 10% of the listeners.
That's
a good healthy number after just 1 year of being on Spotify. So anyway, my point is this. If you can rate or review a show wherever you listen to them, please consider doing so. It's our end of the year, as our end of the year gift for us. Please do that because it helps people find the show. It helps the algorithm, and we appreciate that. All we're trying to do out here is talk about comics and feed the algorithm. That's all we do.
It needs it.
It's hungry.
You can't not feed the algorithm. It's thirst is unquenchable. Part of the world. Yes.
And thank you. And next week's our final show of the year. We'll be back for talk about the comics that came out that week. And we'll be saying thank you. And we'll be having a good time. And until then, I'm Connor.
And I am Namor, king of the sovereign seas. And my crotch is out towards you.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the fact that he gave Namor the old haircut in the Avengers book this week. And I was like, oh, no one told Brian Hitch he's got long hair now.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.